everyone, and welcome to Minute 74 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Eric Deutsch from the Escape from New York Minute and Flash Gordon Minute. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Thank you. I'm not dying easy. I'm dying hard getting through this week.
Just stay away from those RVs.
Right.
You never know what's going to happen to them. So, minute 74 begins with lights coming from the distance and ends with the RV approaching in an overhead shot. So, yesterday we ended things with the SWAT guys unsuccessfully trying to both pick the locks and use a blowtorch to open the locks. And in the end, what they decided to do, the SWAT commander decided to send in the car. Now, we don't know what that is, but what we saw was huge headlights coming towards the screen. And today's minute continues with that. We basically get the shot continues, and we see these lights getting closer and closer to us and trying to find out what it is. And I love the way they do it, because the lights obscure what it is that we're supposed to be seeing. You know, the way that it's shot. You know, the lights basically blind us from seeing what's behind those lights. And I think it's done really, really well, the way that they do it.
Yeah, I agree. It's they're trying to make it into like this big reveal. We have, we have the SWAT guy at the end of the last minute saying, send in the car. And then we just see, this, we're looking and we're like, it's so bright, I can't see. What is this? They're trying to make it into this really huge thing.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, I don't know that the buildup matches the reveal.
No,
of the RV,
it doesn't.
I got to say.
It doesn't.
it's really not that big of a deal.
It definitely doesn't. But it's nice to do it. And I love how they have some of like the police cars, pull out and drive away. They have them move their cars.
Stand aside, make way.
Exactly. Nothing to see here. Move the car out of the way in order for us to get back, to get by. And so the music is great here also. It keeps up. The music keeps going higher and higher in order to like raise more tension. To what's going to happen here. We don't know yet what's going to happen. So how are they raising tension and stuff like that? And then we get another shot of the SWAT guys, an internal shot looking outwards of the SWAT guys trying to still weld in and get through it. And then we see Uli, taking his gun and pointing it at them, aiming and shooting. And he shoots one of them. Now, what's funny is the if you pay attention, he shoots from the left hand side, okay, and it looks like he hits the guy on the right, but in the external shot, he actually hits someone on the left. You see what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to. Let's see. So he's shooting. There's that guy there. He shoots him. Hard to tell.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, it doesn't really make a difference because apparently, we get one guy who's shot in the arm, and then the commander, I guess, runs over to him, and then Eddie rolls out and starts shooting, and he hits the welder. Now, the great part about them hitting the guy with the welder, holding the welder, and I don't know if you noticed this, but there's blood on the glass right
before.
Yeah,
I saw that.
It's like, did the squib go off too early? Or did the squib go off exactly at the point where, where he gets shot? It's really close. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, there should have, the glass should break before there's blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah. Whatever, it's still great. And then we hear like yelling and screaming over the radio, and then the SWAT commander goes, "Rivers, Rodriguez, report." And obviously they're just hearing screaming, which again goes back to what we were saying earlier in the week about, these guys are crying like babies. I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't hurt to get shot. There's no question about that. I'm sure it really does hurt them. But the way that they're portraying these characters is, they're getting shot and they're crying like babies.
Yeah, I mean, it really feeds into, like, the larger thing of that the police in this movie are, not taking it seriously, not prepared, that they've never dealt with something like this before, and they think they're ready for something like this, but they're not. The guy getting caught on the rose, and, the nonchalance of, like, don't worry about it, it's panic fire. Like, they have the confidence of a group that feels that they are trained and well prepared but has never actually gone through it, and now that they're actually going through it, they're finding out they're in over their heads.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. And I think it's on numerous levels. It's not just at a command level, it's also on the lower level of
yes,
the guys,
absolutely.
Of the guys actually doing the work itself. So yeah, they do a nice job of that. And then we hear them screaming in pain, and then the shot changes. First of all, I before the shot changes, if you look behind the SWAT commander, you have the other SWAT guy there, who's the guy who I mentioned it plays Ricky in the third Die Hard movie. He's got this really strange look on his face. He's like gritting his teeth. If you look at second 18, you'll see what I'm talking about.
On his right.
The guy on his right.
Yeah,
the guy on the screen right. Yeah. He's like gritting his teeth.
I mean, maybe he's the one who, specifically trained these four, so it's a reflection on his training skills that they're failing.
That is very possible. That's definitely very possible. And then the shot changes and we get another shot of our good friend Theo. He's sitting there and he goes, "Whoa, wait a minute. What have we here, gentlemen? The police have themselves an RV, southeast corner."
Could he say it more dorkily? He sounds like Professor Frink from The Simpsons when he says this line. The police have themselves an RV.
but it's so funny the way that he does it.
Yeah. Again,
I agree.
Nonchalant. Totally
very,
nonchalant.
Very. And then we get a shot of the RV, coming close by. You get to see the driver in it or whatever. As things are moving, and then we get a side shot of it, and it looks like this powerful tank trying to move it, speeding past everything. We even go past the news van and a whole bunch of police cars and fire trucks and everything as it's going by. And then we get a shot of Franco, one of the guys still guarding everybody on the hostage level. He runs over to the window and looks out. Which is great the way that he does it. This is a guy who I always say looks like Peter Brady. And at this point, we then get a shot of James. Okay, who we saw just a minute ago on the roof. So how is he already inside the building? And he's pulling a trolley that has three large cases on it, and he's getting help from Fritz, and we see that it says rocket ammunition on one of them, and Fritz brings one of them over and brings over a fourth one and places it on top as James gets into the elevator, and they start screaming at each other in German. I couldn't find any translations for what they were saying here, so I couldn't really get an idea of what it is, but it looks like they're both pretty angry at each other. About what? I couldn't tell you.
We have our first criminals in this stretch here of this sequence who is not calm and lackadaisical. He's very, very agitated.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you know where the actor who plays James has been in. Also, don't you?
I do not.
He was in Ghostbusters 2. He played Vigo the was it Vigo the Destroyer?
Vigo the Carpathian.
Vigo the Carpathian. There.
Oh, that's it. Oh, look at that. I never knew that.
Yeah. So, and he starts, he continues screaming as the doors to
Yes.
the elevator are closing, probably saying, "You son of a bitch." Who knows? And then we get a shot of John again. We get to see John again this week, looking out, over the, out of the window, trying to figure out what's going on. He's definitely got a great bird's eye view of everything. And then he looks over and hears the elevator as it passes by him. He's seems very nervous about everything, and at this point he goes, "Oh, Jesus Christ!" Now, exactly if he's saying it, I don't know if he's saying it about the fact that he hears the elevator going, or if he sees that they have the RV. Maybe he's referring to Theo's comment about the RV. Could that be?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, because it means that he knows that the criminals know about the RV. So he clearly, and at this point, he's the only, at this point, McLean and maybe Al are the only ones taking the criminals seriously. I mean, no one else is
Correct.
taking them seriously yet. So
Oh,
at this
Holly is.
point, oh yeah, okay, that's true. Yeah, Holly is, yeah. So I think the fact that he knows that the terrorists know that they're coming in with an RV means he knows that this RV is about to be a sitting duck.
All right, because he has also seen the missiles. He's seen he, you
Right.
know, he saw that they have something.
And he saw Takagi get shot in the head, so he knows that they will kill if necessary.
Yes. Even though just a minute ago, our good friend Han said only one
Right.
of them.
Right. So far, that has not been contradicted just yet.
Right, not with the squad cars. That's true. That is very
You know,
true.
I realize with John being in this shot, I realize that I requested a week that John McClane is barely in this entire week that I have.
Yeah, but you got to talk about candy on Monday,
I mean, yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not complaining. I got the minute I wanted, but I never knew that like this is a 5 minute stretch that he is barely on screen. I don't re it I never would have watched this movie straight through, but like I've done a million times and thought that there's a 5 minute stretch where Bruce Willis is barely even on the screen for a 5 minute stretch.
That's right. We get a few little shots of him
Yeah.
to remind us that he's part of the movie, but that's
Yeah.
it. Interesting. Okay. And then we get a shot, a bird's eye view shot of the RV coming towards the building. I now see if they're trying to make it seem more powerful than it is, this is not a shot you do, because now it looks like a little
It looks like a Hot
A little
Wheel.
matchbox.
Yeah.
This is a matchbox, or going back to our comments from earlier this week about maybe it's a Star Wars, transportation device or something like that. I don't know, but it doesn't do it justice by having this. I mean, earlier in the minute they had a great shot where you see it like rolling by, and you said, "Okay, it is big and it looks like a tank," but here it looks miniature.
Yeah, it almost looks like a model, this overhead shot.
Yeah,
Yeah.
which I don't think it is. I think it is a real shot.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Maybe not. Maybe it's something that Doc Brown would put together crudely in his lab. You know what? It is possible that that's not a real shot. We'll have to give that one a little bit of thought. Not really sure about that. All right, so you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script? So the script has a few discrepancies here. Okay, not that many. First of all, it actually tells us, it says James and Alexander quickly load. So here, James and Alexander, it's not Alexander here. It's in the movie, it's Fritz who's helping him, and it says quickly load two crates onto the service elevator and push the button for the third floor. As the car starts down, they remove an anti-tank gun from one of the crates. So in the script, they're already starting to put it together as the elevator's going down. And it's telling us also that they're going to the third floor, which is important, right? And when Theo then tells everybody, he goes, "Well, what have we here? The police have gotten themselves an RV. James, Alexander, go to the southeast corner." So he's actually, in the movie, we don't know who he's talking to. We think he's saying that, okay, it's coming from the southeast corner. He's not telling them, he's not telling people where to go. But in the script, he's giving direction to two of the terrorists as to where they need to go in order to make their shots. So I find that pretty interesting that they do it that way. Especially given the fact that Alexander, we'll see him tomorrow, you know, but he's not the one who was helping James with taking the stuff. So who knows? Yeah, so that's all. Those are the only minor discrepancies in the script. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story anecdote about something that happened to them over the course of their lives that are somewhat related to a holiday. So what else have you got for us, Eric? You got another story for us? Or anecdote.
It is indeed somewhat related to a holiday.
Okay.
So my great grandfather, his name was Louis Wienig. This is my dad's grandfather. He owned a restaurant in the 19-teens and 1920s that was in the Broadway Theater District, and it was called Wienig's. And it was a very popular place for people that were you know, in vaudeville and Broadway. They would go there, you know, before and after the shows and eat and drink, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of people who at the time were just coming up, who ended up becoming well-known, would go there. It's actually mentioned, and George Burns mentions it in his autobiography, that he used to go there. There's some book that has a conversation between Groucho Marx and George Burns where they talk about going there. So it was a very, you know, popular place. And actually, George Burns, when he was first starting out, had no money, and so my great-grandfather was letting him build up a tab that George Burns incidentally never actually ended up paying. So the stock market crash hit in 1929, and he lost everything, and the restaurant closed, and that took care of his career as a restaurateur. So the space, though, which is on West 46th Street in Manhattan, eventually, I think it became like a clothing store or something like that. Well, eventually, many, many years later, it was reopened as a restaurant called Bond 45 in the same location. Now, I'm sure it's been gut renovated many times over the years, and I'm sure it doesn't resemble even remotely what it used to, but still the physical space is still there. So about, oh boy, maybe 15 years ago, we were trying to figure out what should we do for Christmas, for dinner on Christmas, since we are a mixed religious marriage, my wife and I. So her idea was, hey, why don't we go to the restaurant that's in the old space where your great grandfather had his restaurant? And so we went to Bond 45 and we had dinner in a space that 90 years before my great grandfather had owned and run and had all kinds of, before they were famous, actors and comedians in.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Did you mention to anyone there that, you know, a little bit of the history of the place, or not really?
Yeah, we did. We told our waiter. We might have told the maitre d', I don't remember. But we did, at the very least, I remember us talking to the waiter about it.
Oh, wow. Okay, I mean, what I did a quick search here, it was originally... no, Bond 45 originally was on a different street. It was,
yeah,
on 45th Street.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
It was in the Bond clothing store from 1948 to 1977. And is now on 46th Street. So
right.
Wait,
46th
so,
Street is the, yeah.
And 46th Street is where
when did it say Wienig, the year that Bond 45 moved?
It's in 1977.
Okay.
Wait, so one second. Yeah.
Yeah, so the current location of 46th Street, that's where it was.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. That is really, really cool. And too bad that you couldn't find, like, pictures on the wall and stuff like that from the...
I know. Yeah,
from the
really
old place.
Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. So, yeah, you have anything else for this minute?
No.
All right. Great. So, why don't you tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
So, as the co-host of Escape from New York Minute and Flash Gordon Minute, they're both on any podcatcher out there, and they both have listener societies on Facebook, and we both have Twitter feeds, so you can connect us through any of those.
All right, excellent. And finding me is quite simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So, Eric, you feel like coming back again tomorrow and seeing what happens to the RV?
I think I can hang around for one more minute. I'm like I said earlier, I'm dying hard.
All right. Well, please don't do that in real life. I don't,
Oh,
you know, that I'm not looking forward to. You know, I don't want to be responsible for that. All right. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
yippee-ki-yay.